It is Wednesday, September 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, rescue workers try to save those under the rubble in Mexico's earthquake.
This is a major, major disaster, major tragedy.
We get reaction to U.S. President Donald Trump's denunciation of North Korea at the United Nations. And traditional clowns see a bright future for themselves. It's all ahead. Rescue workers searched Wednesday in Mexico City and nearby states in hopes of finding survivors of a magnitude 7.1 earthquake that killed at least 225 people and collapsed dozens of buildings. Civilians joined military and police search and rescue teams shortly after the earthquake struck Tuesday, using heavy machinery and their bare hands to remove piles of rubble. I spoke with reporter James Bleers in Mexico City about the extent of the damage.
The damage is massive. Just in Mexico City alone, the mayor of Mexico City, Miguel Ángel Mancera, has said that 44 buildings have collapsed. Probably more will have to be demolished. The rescue efforts are concentrated at the moment at a children's school, Enrique Rebesmen, in the south of the city. More than 20 children are confirmed dead. In fact, we think 32. Five adults have died. There are more children under the rubble. But the damage to structural damage is immense, not just to Mexico City. The epicenter was in Puebla, a church there, a church service going on at the time of the quake, and major loss of life there. Also, a major loss of life and massive structural damage to the state of Morelos, which is just to the south of Mexico and the state of Mexico. That's been reported by the governor of Morelos, Graco Ramirez. Damage and loss of life as far away as Guerrero, which is right in the south. This earthquake, two things that make it even more distinctive than it already is and more tragic than it already is. On the 7th of September, we had an earthquake prior to this, which was even more powerful. But this one originated on land, not at sea, off the Pacific. This one originated on land and has been far more devastating. This happened yesterday, the 19th of September. The 19th of September was exactly 32 years since a massive earthquake hit Mexico City, devastating the downtown area, concertinaing many, many buildings, and the loss of life there at that time was conservatively estimated at more than 10,000 people. People here can hardly believe that 32 years to the day of that earthquake, another one has devastated Mexico City.
Well, considering that previous earthquake, were there changes, revisions made to the buildings in the city as far to make them more earthquake-proof?
Yes, exactly. What has happened is that many buildings here, taller buildings, have to have steel inner structures, and the design has been altered so that in quakes like this, many of the buildings sway instead of snap or crumble. But this has not worked. This particular time with some of the buildings, a number of these particular buildings which have collapsed, not all of them, but a number of them were older buildings. Of course, these stringent regulations don't apply so much as you get outside Mexico City. And the damage to, as I've mentioned, to Morelos, Puebla, and the state of Mexico has been considerably worse than probably expected because these building regulations probably weren't enforced as strictly as in Mexico City itself. This is a major, major disaster, major tragedy. President Enrique Peña Nieto, the president of Mexico, has declared 3 days of national mourning. This is not over yet. There are many people still trapped in buildings. There's a building in near a place called Linda Vista in the north of Mexico City. Apparently, the rescue services say that six, possibly seven people are trapped inside a luxury apartment block, which was six floors. It's now crumpled into about two and a half. And they feel and they think they've heard voices, and they think that people are alive still in there. This is being repeated in other places in Mexico City and, as I've mentioned, further afield.
What about power outages?
There have been major power outages, but the electricity people, CFE, the electricity people here, have said that electricity is being restored. Public transport is still being offered free to people so they can get around, but very few people are going to work today. Schools in, I think it's 10 states, fanning out from Mexico City, have cancelled all lessons. And the concentration, the attention of people is on this rescue effort to see, because time is running out. 20 hours or more have gone and passed since the earthquake. As the interior minister said, the longer it goes, the less chance there is.
That's reporter James Bleers in Mexico City. Well, Mike Corey is a Canadian travel blogger who's also in Mexico City. He describes to VOA by Skype his and his girlfriend's reaction after the earthquake struck.
I remember walking out and seeing all the power lines shaking, all the buildings shaking, and looking down the street about a block. And there's a pretty famous highway there called Viaducto that goes east-west. And this is maybe a block from our house. And I remember seeing a building just the last millisecond of it collapsing, like at least five floors just completely down like a deck of cards. And on the very, very top, there was a giant billboard with some steel girders. And so the billboard, I remember, was always very high. Now it's completely down at ground level. So it was completely flattened. So we, in the sprint, locked ourselves out of the apartment, and we were both in bare feet, and we wanted to go see if there's anything we could do to help. Like, we didn't really know what to do, so we were both a little bit in shock. And you can see black smoke off on the horizon. Helicopters erupting immediately, flying around the city. We went over to see if we could help at the building, but it was just like, it was like blood on the street. There was glass all over the place. We had bare feet.
Canadian travel blogger Mike Corey in Mexico City. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Andrew, I'm sure there's a lot of reaction on social media to this.
There is indeed. We saw yesterday after this occurred videos of buildings collapsing after people had evacuated, the buildings with cracks in them just coming down seemingly out of nowhere. But we're also seeing today scenes of heroism, people digging through the rubble, donating water and supplies, forming human chains to try to either bucket brigades to move rubble or try to deliver those supplies. And we're also seeing fire departments from the U.S. heading to Mexico to help, and other countries trying to offer aid. And even with the high tech that we have and the social media that we have, sometimes basic communication works best. And there's a photo going around on social media that shows people putting up lists of names, handwritten lists of people who have already been rescued. And sometimes that's the best way to communicate in those situations when the power lines are down and the phone lines are down and there's not a way to communicate electronically. So a lot of people are struck by that photo, saying that that supersedes a lot of the technology that we have. And sometimes even the basic ways of communication are best. We're also seeing a lot of talk about Hurricane Maria. We've already had Harvey, we've already had Irma, now add Maria to the list after it slams into Puerto Rico. Scenes of devastation from the island after it was already hit by Irma, lots of flooding, high winds, pictures that we're just starting to see after the eye moved through the country show just mass devastation. And so I suspect, just as we saw with Harvey and Irma, there's going to be efforts to try to help the people of Puerto Rico. And finally, we'll end with a light note. First Lady Melania Trump is up at the UN with her husband, President Donald Trump, and she spoke out today against cyberbullying at a UN event, saying that parents need to be responsible for what their children see and experience on social media. So, of course, a lot of people saying, well, look at your husband. He does quite a job of cyberbullying himself. You need to start with him. But many other people saying it's nice to see her speaking out on an issue that is pervasive, that does affect a lot of children. It's good to see her devote the power of her office to that issue.
All right. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. A security firm links Iranian hackers to malware attacks. Hurricane Maria hits Puerto Rico. President Trump has decided whether to pull the U.S. out of the Iran nuclear accord, but he's not yet stated that. And a top U.S. military official reaffirms the commitment to U.S. allies. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the voanews.com website. This is VOA. This is International Edition. A statement by South Korean President Moon Jae-in Wednesday referred to President Donald Trump's denunciation of North Korean behavior as portraying a firm and specific stance on the key issues regarding keeping peace and safety. It said Mr. Trump's remarks clearly showed how seriously the United States government views North Korea's nuclear program. Japanese Chief Cabinet Secretary Yoshihide Suga said he believes it is necessary to have strong deterrence that all options are on the table expressed by President Trump. Speaking for the first time as president of the UN General Assembly Tuesday, Mr. Trump denounced the regime of Kim Jong-un as depraved, showing contempt both for other nations and the well-being of its own people.
It is responsible for the starvation deaths of millions of North Koreans and for the imprisonment, torture, killing, and oppression of countless more. Now North Korea's reckless pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles threatens the entire world with unthinkable loss of human life. It is an outrage that some nations would not only trade with such a regime, but would arm, supply, and financially support a country that imperils the world with nuclear conflict. No nation on earth has an interest in seeing this band of criminals arm itself with nuclear weapons and missiles. The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea.
But Asian Studies professor Jeff Kingston of Temple University in Tokyo tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the man on the streets of the Japanese capital would think this was not a wise speech to make.
Threatening Kim may play well for Trump's base, but in terms of productively addressing the situation, it doesn't seem to mark any progress. Of course, the governments of South Korea and Japan want to portray solidarity. They view the alliance with the United States as great protection for them. And so there have been huge differences, particularly between Seoul and Washington, on how to move forward on dealing with the crisis. But I think that if you look at a lot of Japanese, given the nuclear experience in Japan, Trump's threatening annihilation of North Korea don't go down well with people on the street. I think it's clear that the governments want to show solidarity and that they are united. The alliance is close, but I don't think, particularly in South Korea, that they think that Trump's position is a productive way to deal with the situation.
One North Korea analyst in Washington said that with those words, President Trump handed the regime of Kim Jong-un the soundbite of the century. It will play on a continuous loop on North Korean state television.
Yes, in terms of the propaganda of Pyongyang, the existential threat from the United States has long been a staple. We are surrounded, we're threatened, and so this strengthens the hand of the regime at home.
China's foreign ministry on Wednesday said China supports a peaceful resolution to the North Korean matter. In an op-ed piece in the People's Daily, Curtis Stone writes, "The Korean Peninsula is on edge, made more so by words and actions that worsen tensions. Mr. Trump's political chest thumping is unhelpful. It will only push the DPRK to pursue even riskier policies, because the survival of the regime is at stake."
Yes, Trump is throwing fuel on the fire. And to the extent that he threatens the regime is going to double up and continue with its weapons program because they realize that that is the only thing keeping them in the game.
Jeff Kingston said he believes Asian leaders want a cooling down of the rhetoric and pursuit of a policy of both engagement with and pressure on North Korea. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. It, based on Stephen King's novel about a demonic clown that kills children, was the top-grossing movie this past weekend in the U.S. Audiences seem to want to be scared, and creepy clowns have been popping up everywhere. But traditional clowns say audiences want to be entertained, and they continue to do what they can to present a different image. Faith Lapidus reports.
For generations, clowns have made children laugh. More recently, they're making them scream.
I think they're really scary. I don't know. I guess from It, when I was little, I seen it before, and I've just been terrified ever since.
The mask. You don't know what's behind the mask. That's what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're quite creepy.
That response does not surprise historian and former professional clown David Carlyon.
My theory, based on the evidence, is that the image of the clown as the little kid's friend and as the ideal of sweetness and light became so overblown, so inflated, that it had to be popped.
So instead of buffoonish circus clowns or gentle mimes like Marcel Marceau, we have grotesque clowns who might get a laugh. But it's a nervous laugh, not a joyful one. There are plenty of clowns in training hoping to bring joyful laughs. And at the clown school in Los Angeles, instructor Zach Steele said he chooses to ignore the hype around bad clowns, as do his students.
If I spent all my time trying to combat that and telling those people to be quiet, I would have no time to do anything else, to actually pursue what clown actually is, which is a positive and a creative, imaginative presence in our lives, a manifestation of all of our desires to pursue pleasure and pursue fun and connect with each other on those levels.
Lisa Long, known as Cece the Clown, says those pleasurable connections are why she's sure the clowning has a bright future.
How often do you get a chance to really laugh or be silly and have fun? I think people are attracted to that. To the laughter. And what I do as a professional children's entertainer is I bring that sometimes to children who may not have had a chance to even laugh that day or that week. And the opportunity to bring laughter, I think that's what attracts people to clowns.
The clowning profession has a future, she says, as long as the world has children. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thanks very much, Faith. Well, a new report from the British analyst group, the Royal United Services Institute, says the lack of a unified approach by world governments to paying kidnap ransoms is putting the lives of citizens of all nationalities at greater risk and providing terror groups with a big source of finance. The authors call for a global, rigorously applied, and scrupulously monitored commitment to prevent any concessions to terrorist organizations. A series of high-profile kidnappings by Islamic State in Syria highlighted the lack of a unified global response. Among them was American filmmaker James Foley, who was held for nearly 2 years alongside other hostages until he was murdered in August 2014. Tom Keatings of the Royal United Services Institute says that terrorists often will abuse hostages whose governments refuse to negotiate in order to raise the pressure on countries that do. France is among the countries accused of paying ransoms. In December 2014, then-President François Hollande waited on the tarmac of a military airport outside Paris to welcome home hostage Serge Lazarevic, who had been kidnapped in Mali by Al-Qaeda militants. He's one of several French hostages to be released. While Hollande consistently denied his government paid ransoms, the evidence suggests otherwise. That is according to Keating. Well, that is our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thank you so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Department of the Treasury announced targeted sanctions on two South Sudanese government officials and one former official for their roles in threatening the peace, security, or stability of South Sudan. Three companies that are owned or controlled by one of the officials were also sanctioned. The measures taken against Malik Ruben Riak Rengu, Michael Makui Lewith, and Paul Malong Awan make clear that the U.S. government will impose consequences on those who expand the conflict and derail peace efforts. The Treasury Department also released a Financial Crimes Enforcement Network advisory alerting U.S. financial institutions to the possibility that certain South Sudanese senior political figures may try to use the U.S. financial system to move or hide proceeds of public corruption. The United States stands ready to impose other measures against those responsible for undermining the peace, security, or stability of South Sudan. As the advisory demonstrates, the United States is committed to increasing scrutiny on those who enrich themselves through corruption, while the South Sudanese people suffer through economic hardship and a dire humanitarian crisis. 6 million people in South Sudan, half of the population, face life-threatening hunger, while more than 4 million people have been displaced from their homes, including 2 million refugees. This is a man-made crisis and one the government of South Sudan can stop, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. We continue to make clear to South Sudan's leaders that they must honor their declared ceasefire, revive the 2015 agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan by engaging meaningfully with opposition parties, bring an end to atrocities, stop the harassment of aid workers, stem human rights abuses, cooperate fully with the United Nations mission in South Sudan, and take action against corruption, said Ms. Nauert. The United States urges all parties to engage constructively in the upcoming South Sudan peace process.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is Science in a Minute.
When you think of Mercury, the closest planet to the Sun, you probably don't think of it as having any ice. But research over the last 30 years has suggested that ice might be found inside the planet's craters where it's shielded from the rays of the Sun. In a new study, researchers from Brown University found three craters near the planet's north pole that seem to hold large accumulations of surface ice. Along with these larger deposits, the Brown researchers say they have also found evidence of smaller collections of ice hidden not only inside craters, but also in shadowed terrain between craters. The researchers say that while these additional deposits might be small individually, together they could add up to a lot more ice on Mercury that had not been accounted for. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.